The Tom Woods Show, episode 1923.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, everybody. Harry's, the official razor of The Tom Woods Show, is offering listeners their starter set at harrys.com/woods. That's a 5-blade razor, a weighted ergonomic handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel blade cover, a $13 value, all for just $3 at harrys.com/woods. Hey, everybody. Tom Woods here. All right. Look, today we're talking about ongoing drama in the Libertarian Party, but I don't care. If you're telling me, Woods, I don't care about the Libertarian Party, you've got to listen to this episode anyway. Okay? You've got to listen to this episode anyway because I told you yesterday that I get very lively in this episode. So you've got to hear this, okay? This is the pure, full, uncensored Woods. Well, uncensored, I don't know. It's not bad language in it, I suppose, but it's just not holding anything back here in this particular episode. So let me give you the background. We're joined today by Joshua Smith, who's an at-large member of the Libertarian National Committee. We're talking about the ongoing scandal and crisis in the party. We're going to give you a little bit of the background there. But basically what happened is the New Hampshire Libertarian Party was overwhelmingly dominated by people who belong to the Mises Caucus, which are the really, really committed, hardcore libertarians who want to emphasize what I consider to be the primary issues, which is the warfare state, the Federal Reserve, emphasis on Austrian school economics, the drug war, stuff like that, and keep that stuff front and center, and just be grounded in the traditional Misesian worldview of private property, the international division of labor, and a private property society. This is what libertarianism is. And of course, with peace as the backdrop, that's what it is. So the Mises Caucus is not introducing some foreign, weird, alien set of ideas here. This is the heart of what libertarianism is all about. And we have become very influential, and in New Hampshire in particular. So it looks like the chair didn't care for this and more or less tried to purge people and start a new party or get rid of the executive committee and create her own. And it looks like, I mean, it's very, very hard to explain some of the behavior of the national chair unless we take it to mean that he approved of this. It's very, very hard to understand what was going on in any other way. So I got Joshua Smith on here, and he's going to fill us in on exactly what's happening. Joshua, welcome back.
Thanks a lot for having me, Tom. I really appreciate it.
All right. Given how quickly events are moving, I want to tell people that we are recording this on Sunday night, June 20th, 2021, and it's going to be released on June 22nd. It's going to be released on Tuesday. So things can happen, but it doesn't matter. We're going to bring things up to date and have some commentary about what's been going on. So for anybody who's been following the situation at all closely, you know that the party chair, Joe Bishop Hinchman, resigned several days ago. And there's been now a movement to remove Karen Ann Harlos as a secretary of the party. So there's a lot of fireworks going on. Both of them have been guests on the Tom Woods Show. I'm a very ecumenical person, Josh. What can I tell you?
Yeah.
And so I want you, because I did do an entire episode with Karen Ann on the subject of what happened in New Hampshire. For anybody who didn't hear that, can you just summarize in one or two sentences, the guts of what happened in New Hampshire?
Sure. It started with the Mises Caucus taking over the state board, basically. That's what happened. They extended an olive branch to a non-Mises Caucus member to become chair of that board as kind of a show of unity in the New Hampshire party. And that chair turned around and, with the help of, you know, mystery co-conspirators and our national chairman, stabbed all of those people in the back and tried to go rogue to take the party away. It failed miserably, though. So,
all right. So I want to talk about a couple of things that I've been seeing around. One of them involves the question of what exactly was the role of the chairman of the party, the national chairman, Joe Bishop Hinchman, in all this. This still remains a bit murky. And some people are saying, well, this had nothing to do with him. There's no actual evidence that he colluded with the state chair of New Hampshire to, you know, basically purge it of people who were, you know, who deviated from them ideologically. But I don't know. I mean, what do you think? Is there a strong suggestion? Like, what do you think?
Oh, there's no doubt in my mind that he colluded with her and unnamed co-conspirators in New Hampshire. But I know who the co-conspirators are, at least some of them. Look, Joe, when we first brought this to the board on the LNC, Joe immediately was like, I don't want any lies being passed around about me, blah, 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 blah. I sent her a letter that I would send to any chair that asked me for the letter. Well, at first, I kind of gave them the benefit of the doubt. I really did. Back up.
Most people don't know what letter you're talking about. Assume you're talking to people who know nothing about this.
Sure. So he wrote a letter to her basically stating that she was the official party chair and whatever party she was chairing was the official party of the Libertarian Party of New Hampshire or the official XCOM. So what she did was she ran with that letter and totally took off and said nobody was official in that party anymore until they signed some made up bogus pledge that she created out of thin air. She created her own bylaws, all that stuff. Okay. So at first I wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt because this happened on like the 12th or something. And the letter was dated the 7th. So, you know, there could be a case made that Joe was used in this scheme to do what she did. But then she comes out on video. We all pulled her into a video chat, several LNC members, Karen Ann and myself. And she admits that she had already told Joe what was going to happen, what was happening. She was worried there was going to be a fight over the social media accounts, all this stuff. That's why she wanted the letter. So Joe was aware. And then in Joe's resignation letter, prior to Joe's resignation letter, he put out a statement saying that, you know, he did know. He actually admits it in the first statement he made on the LNC list that he knew. Well, then Gilletta Jarvis, the chair of the party, goes out of the New Hampshire party. Yeah, the prior chair now, goes out and does an interview with Adam Kokesh the other morning and says, actually, I'm not the one who asked Joe for the letter. There's an unnamed co-conspirator in New Hampshire that asked him for the letter, but he just delivered it to me. Uh-huh. And we all know who it is.
Yeah.
I mean, we all know who it is. Yeah. We all know that it was Sarwark. No one had, you know, Shane Hazel asked him on Twitter. He said, yes, we know it was him. Okay. And Karen and I we wanted to fight. We didn't want to see this state taken away by some bullshit collusion that was going on between our chair and Sarwark and, you know, this shadow wannabe Libertarian Party. And so we fought and fought and fought. And then I realized something. I said, you know what? I bet there's correspondence between them. And so I pushed a motion to release all of the chairman's correspondence to the New Hampshire Libertarians. And within an hour, the digital assets were returned to the board, the official board of the Libertarian Party of New Hampshire. And then we started pushing for an investigation and he resigned. So that should tell you most of what you need to know.
But the resignation letter is filled with all kinds of reasons for why he resigned. Sure. Right? It's that, look, the party is dealing with a whole lot of toxic people and we have people who look the other way at racism and bigotry and the usual sort of thing. And it's been interesting that there are three people who have been in odd positions here. There have been two other resignations, and all three of them, there's been something fishy about. I mean, with Joe Bishop Henchman, the question is, what exactly was his role in all this? The right. Two other people I want to talk about from the LNC who resigned, we'll get to them in a minute, but it turns out they both were facing one or another form of recall. Like what they had done was very unpopular with their own people. So rather than stick around and face what was obviously coming to them, they write these self-serving letters about how they can't tolerate bigotry. I mean, like, so you can't possibly expect anybody to believe this.
No. And it's so Tucker Coburn was the first one to resign. He was the Region 8 representative. He was the rep for the New Hampshire party. And he was one of two yes votes to disaffiliate a state that elected him to represent them. Okay. So of course I went and pushed the state chairs. I went and lobbied the state chairs. Like, this guy can no longer effectively, unbiasedly represent these regions. He's trying to disaffiliate an entire state party, not just the Mises Caucus. You know what I mean, Tom? He was trying to disaffiliate the entire state party. There's plenty of members there that aren't Mises Caucus. And so his state chairs started circulating a petition to remove him. They only need 4 of 8 state chairs to remove. And it wasn't going his way. So he resigned. And I actually suggested to him on the LNC list, hey, man, you should probably resign. You know, you can no longer effectively represent a region that you have this bias towards. You should resign. And within a couple hours, he resigned.
Well, now, incidentally, if I just may mention in parentheses, not that everything's about me, you understand?
Sure.
It is not. But this makes the decision to invite me to speak at the convention seem like a picnic. I mean, because that really was a picnic. I mean, the vote was 12-1 with 2 abstentions. I mean, that really was not particularly close. But he was the one.
He was the
who
one
who voted against. Yeah. And yeah. I mean, number one, if he really believed that I was as bad as he said I was, he should have resigned on the spot. I can't possibly be part of a party who invites this terrible, I don't know what he thinks I am. So, right. So we had that. But the other part of this is Karen Ann Harlos made the point that it's the job of these people in the LNC to represent their region. Now, obviously, with the exception of the at-large people, but to represent their particular region. She said there is no region where there would have been a majority of people saying, don't invite Woods. Absolutely not. So no. That was just him going rogue against his own people. And anyway, so now he's gone. And then this other fellow, Francis Went, I guess.
Yes.
So he was somebody who, when people would write and say, hey, thanks for inviting Woods, or, you know, don't back down, make sure, you know. And by the way, this whole thing, I've spoken at Libertarian Party events for years and years with not a peep out of anybody. You know? Mm-hmm. So I don't know what... Well, I do know what's going on. It's that it's symbolic. It's that I represent, at this point now, I'm not just Tom Woods. I'm Tom Woods, who's associated with the Mises Caucus, and they can't let that be perceived as advancing. But sure. Wendt was writing back a letter saying, you know, I believe in you know, letting all the different, you know, wings or factions of the party have their say, and, you know, I think that's the best way forward. And he said, you know, I know some people support Woods, and other people find him abhorrent. Okay, first of all, abhorrent. I mean, if anybody listens to me, that maybe they disagree with me. Do I really come across as an abhorrent person?
Not at all,
you know,
Tom.
It's so crazy. Right. So that just struck me as such an odd thing to say when actually it is a tiny sliver. And the vast bulk of them, if you ask them five simple questions about me, they couldn't answer any of them. You know, so almost none of them even know anything about me. Anyway, it's like five people. Anyway, so that guy, so he's the second guy. So we'll get back to Henchman, but as long as we're on this, I have the resignation of, is he the District 1?
He was the region. He was the region one coordinator.
Region one coordinator. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so I have his resignation thing in front of me also. And he starts by saying that he first joined the Libertarian Party 10 years ago after sitting in Economics 101. And he learned something about political markets and this interested him. And then he goes on from there. And somebody made the comment, this is kind of revealing, that some of the folks who are not inclined in our direction are not particularly well-read. I mean, that whatever insight he got from Economics 101 was not from the Austrian school. It was not, you know, wasn't actually libertarianism. It wasn't like I am deeply read in the libertarian tradition, and that's what drew me into it. It was some kind of odd observation, you know, whereas, you know, you and I and the whole Mises Caucus, we are driven by a passion, you know, against the state and its wars and the Fed, and we're for the Austrian school. And like, we really know who we are. You know, I mean, it kind of reminds me of the time, and I don't really want to badmouth Gary Johnson because, you know, he's a good guy for what he is. But I remember him being asked by Bob Wenzel, you know, what did you read that influenced you to become a libertarian? And he honestly didn't know. Like, he made up an answer. He said, well, yeah, I read a book called Why I'm a Libertarian or some kind of thing. There is no such book. You know, like all these people on this site, or I don't want to say all, but a vastly disproportionate number of them, they kind of have some, you know, instincts and habits and prejudices that lead them toward libertarianism, but they're not grounded in the stuff. You know, like they're always lecturing us that we're besmirching the name of Mises. But I'm telling you, if they could name me 5 points Mises made in his career, it would surprise me.
Did you see the post that I sent you the other day, Tom, about Mises, how Mises would have sued all of these Rothbardians? And I'm like, are you stupid?
Yeah.
he would have sued all the Rothbards and Hoppas. And I'm like, yeah, no, Rothbard was his understudy and Hoppe studied under Rothbard. What are you talking? Who are you?
Yeah.
Are you, you know?
No, it's totally upset. Mises had nothing but respect for Rothbard, as was made clear on many occasions. So what was going on with Francis Went when he resigned? Was that a principled resignation about bigotry?
No, of course not. Of course not. And this is where it gets really actually kind of funny at this point. So Went, the Region 1 alt last term, or the term before last term, when Karen Ann Harlos was the region rep for Region 1, which is the biggest region we have. It's got like 12 states. It's huge. And Karen Ann was the loved and cherished Region 1 rep, and her alt had to leave the board. And so Went came on last year as the alternate halfway through the term. And then this year became the Region 1 alternate. Well, what he did was he went and voted to remove Karen Ann Harlos. Wouldn't you know, she just happened to be the region rep for the same region he was representing. And guess what else? He didn't go around and ask his state chairs what they wanted him to do. So just like, much like Tucker Coburn, they decided they would circulate a petition to recall Wendt for going against the wishes of his region. And it wasn't going his way, Tom. And so he decided he would resign. And on the way out the door, blame it on Karen Ann Harlos, the Mises Caucus, myself, and the terrible boogeyman bigotry. So
Right. And then to get to the ultimate letter, the resignation letter from Joe Bishop Henchman, speaking about toxic people in the party. Now, I could be wrong about this, Josh, but I don't think he said a word about any of the people who, when you were running for chair, tried to interfere in your personal life, tried to alienate your daughter from you, to do things that not one person in the Mises Caucus would have dreamed of doing to anyone, because we, unlike them, are decent human beings. I'd say that's a pretty toxic kind of person. Did he have any complaint about that?
No.
I ask rhetorically.
Yeah. It's admission through projection, Tom. That's what's going on here. You know what I mean? These people are the toxic ones. They have been the toxic ones since the Beltway Mises split. I mean, we know that. And that's why the party has largely done nothing for a decade, more than a decade. And it's just, they scream these bad words at us for no reason whatsoever. None of us are Nazis. None of us are racist. Maybe there's a couple racists here and there, you know, silently bigots. I don't know. But it's not the norm at all. It's not even close. These are the same people that are calling Dave Smith a Nazi, you know, a Jewish man, a Nazi. Go figure. And then they turn around and say that they're all virtuous and everything's great and they're leaving because of bigotry. Well, I think they're leaving because they're wusses and they got caught with their hands in the cookie jar, Tom, in a blatant move of corruption to try and take a state affiliate that we had won through their dumb democratic process. You know, and they weren't happy about it. And that's what's really going on. They're losing their stronghold. They're losing their little LARPing positions of power in this party. And they don't want anything to do with it if they can't have their name next to some power position. And that's what it is.
Well, he's complaining in the letter that people like, well, I mean, he doesn't name names, but people like you and me are making it impossible for him to help libertarian candidates win elections. I mean, like, what? Okay, so we're already in fantasy world here. But do you realize that there is a huge number of completely disenfranchised people out there, politically homeless people, who if the Libertarian Party had said something about lockdowns, these people might have listened. Not a word. Okay, no. So Joe Bishop Henchman, you are making it impossible for us to reach out to them or for these people to feel like if they become members of the Libertarian Party, instead of actually living up to what the Libertarian Party claims to believe in, which is that you can live the way you want, they're going to be hectored and lectured to about whatever the latest leftist cultural campaign is. That's also driving away a huge number of people. But since, I don't know, these are not his kind of people. I don't know, he doesn't want them in the party. I guess he's trying to appeal to people who are mildly disaffected with the Democrats. And those people are not coming into the Libertarian Party. You know, no matter what you or I do, Josh, no matter what you or I do, those people are not coming in.
Yeah, I mean, he's a Beltway DC tax lawyer. I mean, he lives and breathes.
I'm sure he does some good tax work for people. You know, I have no doubt about that. Sure. But this is not, like, I was just looking at his Twitter account the other day, and, you know, he had retweeted David Bowes of the Cato Institute. That's about the level.
He's a big Cato guy.
Yeah, that's about the level he wants. You know, like, Washington, DC, respectability, don't really upset the apple cart. You know, say a few things like, hey, we have to end the drug war, and that's as edgy as you get. But any edgier than that, and hey, you know, you're disrupting my ability to appeal to respectable people, not one of whom will ever give the Libertarian Party a hearing.
Well, we can just settle all this right now, Tom. He supported mandatory masks and mandatory vaccine programs. That's all we got to say. Do you know what I mean?
Is that really true?
That's really true.
Was it, well, I mean, how did he put it?
I mean, he literally was arguing with people on Twitter. I'll have to go and find the screenshots, but he was literally arguing with people on why mandatory vaccines are a good thing in a global pandemic, you know? And then we sit around and wonder why the Libertarian Party stayed quiet for 18 months, Tom, about tyrannical economic terrorism and lockdowns in this country. And there's your answer. Who controls all of the messaging for the Libertarian Party, chair.
Right, but yeah, exactly. And the messaging would always be whatever the culture wanted the Libertarian Party to say, by and large, it would say. With a few exceptions, I mean, you know, we're more firmly against civil asset forfeiture than the average person. Whoa.
Yeah.
Hey, all right. Hold on there.
You should slinging them arrows, yeah. Buddy. Good job.
Come on. You know, you're running a party that right now, you know, maybe there's going to be some big cultural shift in the U.S. toward libertarianism. I don't know. But right now, we're a real, real underdog. So, yeah, we've tried this strategy of, well, let's basically, you know, if today everybody's against sexual harassment, we'll add that we also think sexual harassment is bad. Now, look, I'm not in favor. I'm probably more against it than most people, okay? But I understand that there is no value in just repeating what people already know and think. There's no value in that. So in the 19th century, I'm telling you, these people who talk about bigotry and so on and so forth, I am telling you, the people who today are sitting there trying to see what the cultural winds are and then speaking, these are the last people in the world who would have stood against slavery in the 19th century. Because if you were trying to see what where the political winds were blowing, look, even in the North, they couldn't stand abolitionists. Even in the North, right. There's no way these people would have been against. Absolutely zero chance of that.
But it's trendy now, Tom. They don't want to go against the grain. If they go against the grain, they have to continue the courage of their convictions, right? And they lack any courage when it comes to this kind of things. They don't want to stand up to the state. These people that we're fighting on the LNC right now are dropping off an unpaid, small, third-party position on a board because of the of scary boogeyman bigotry that they can't even give any examples of. Do you think they're going to fight the state?
Yeah. No. Okay. They tried to put up a petition trying to get my invitation to speak to the national convention next year withdrawn. Even though, again, I spoke at the national convention in 2016, not a peep out of anybody. Right. And I've spoken at all kinds of state conventions. I had Lee Wrights, who was a party stalwart, come up to me after my talk at the 2012 Texas State Libertarian Convention and say I should run for president with him as the VP. Like, he wanted me to be at the top of the ticket. And half these people loved Lee Wrights, so they'd be horrified to know.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, he was a wonderful man. It's a real shame not to have him anymore. But so they circulated this little petition, got a couple hundred signatures. Somebody else, I don't know who the person was, put up a joke counter petition saying, okay, you've got your petition against Woods. My petition is not only should he speak, he should be the only speaker for the entire convention. And this got like 6,500.
Oh, it's well over that now. Tom.
Oh, is it really? Okay.
Like over 8,000 or something now.
That's so incredible, right? Yeah. So, you know, so these are facts. Like, this is actually what's happening in the world. You know, this is what's actually going on, is that the energy and the enthusiasm is with our side. Overwhelmingly with our side.
Undoubtedly. And I've been saying this since my first chair run in 2017. You know, I started out with 50 people in a Facebook group, the Mises Caucus, in 2017. And I just told Nick Sarwark this. I set out on a mission 4 years ago to move the Overton window in this party. You laughed at me. You mocked me. Your supporters attacked my family. I said, who's laughing now, Nick? Who's laughing now, buddy? Look around you. Of course, we are the majority now, and it just keeps getting bigger, and they keep doing things to radicalize our base even more. I mean, going after Karen Ann Harlos, going after New Hampshire after Mises Caucus won it. I don't even think they understand that not only do we have New Hampshire, we have like 25 state boards now, and there's still a whole nother year of convention season till the national convention. So all they're doing is radicalizing our base. We have 25 state boards today. Next month, we're going to have 30. The month after that, we're going to have 40. It's over. We won. You know, and they just keep doing the same bumbling idiot things that make it even harder for them. You know, we told them we'd work with them in 2017. We gave them the opportunity and they laughed at us, Tom.
Hey, everybody, let's take a minute to thank the official razor of the Tom Woods Show, Harry's. Ever since growing a beard, I've focused my shaving specifically on the neck, which is such a sensitive area. And when I have used the bargain brand of razor, I wind up looking like I had some kind of a altercation with a bear or something, a bloody mess, awful. With Harry's, my shave is smooth and close and comfortable every single doggone time. And you know what? The price is right too, as low as $2 a refill. Harry's bought a factory in Germany that's been making precision-engineered blades for over 100 years. And no gimmicky features with Harry's. The razor isn't going to tell you the weather. It's not going to give you a massage. It's just going to give you a sharp blade and a really close, comfortable shave. They've got 100% money-back guarantee on Harrys.com, but you won't need that because, like me, you're going to love your Harry's razor. Harry's is giving their best offer to Tom Woods Show listeners. New Harry's customers can get a starter set at harrys.com/woods. You get a 5-blade razor, a weighted ergonomic handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel blade cover, a $13 value, all for just $3. There's never been a better time to try Harry's. Go to harrys.com/woods to redeem your offer today. Well, I just remembered why I brought that petition thing up, because in that crazy petition, they had to somehow justify how could they paint me as a bad guy. So they have a few links, and like one or two of them, they had to use the Wayback Machine. I mean, you know, like,
of course,
dig up some article from my graduate school. I mean, it's just unbelievable. But then one of them was an article I didn't even remember writing. And I thought, how they found that. So in other words, they had to comb through hundreds and hundreds of articles that they couldn't possibly, at least publicly anyway, and keep their credibility, have any objection to. There's no way. They would have had to go through almost everything. So it's like they know that what I'm doing is unobjectionable. If they had to dig out an article I don't even remember, and I still agree with the article. I'm not taking anything back. But yeah, one of them was an article I wrote about Liberty Fund's issuance of a book called The Southern Essays of Richard M. Weaver. Now, Liberty Fund is a libertarian publishing outlet, which sure. I'm sure is now too right-wing for these people also. You know, and so I'd written an appreciative review of this collection of Richard Weaver's essays. Richard Weaver is a great guy. I mean, he was a conservative with very strong libertarian leanings who was against the atomic bombings of Japan, which is more than I can say for some of the old people in the LP of Nevada in the old days, sure. You know?
Yeah.
And I look back at it, and I actually thought, wow, I am surprised that at age 31, I wrote such a learned essay. Like that was actually I didn't say, oh my gosh, they caught me.
But right.
Anyway.
You're like, oh yeah, man, I can't believe
that.
Yeah,
this is actually a pretty good essay. I actually like this. Thank you for reciting it.
Look, when I really, really decided I was no longer taking any of these people seriously was when, you remember when you wrote your little article about your affiliation with the League of the South?
Oh, yeah.
And this had always been the argument against you, Tom. The League of the South, he helped do this. And I read your article, and I didn't know. Like, I didn't know what your affiliation was with at the yeah. time. And I read your article, and I said, how anybody could read this and still keep going after this League of the South affiliation like you were some big, huge Ku Klux Klan member. And
it was a different group. It was a totally different group. It's why all the PhDs left after a while. It became a different group.
Yep.
I mean,
And so them still using that? To this day?
Yeah, no, it's that they assume people won't look into it. I mean, it really is evil. I mean, it's the kind of thing like what they did with you and your family. It's just pure evil. I mean, honestly, they have no argument. They have no side. They just figure no one will bother to look into it, and they'll just but I've really turned that around on them, because what they don't understand is when you rally your own people, you know, when you say, look, this is what people are doing to me, and I have a community who really, really likes what I do. Boy, that... They've awakened a giant that is not going back to sleep. Like that silly but funny counter petition, that says something. Like, people have had it. They are tired of this nonsense of these left-wing and they are left-wing accusations of bigotry, because normal people have a normal definition of bigotry. You know, when you have a prejudice against a particular group and you treat them badly, you know, and you're just a general jerk to people on the basis of things they have no control over. I mean, that's what a bigot is. There's none of that. Absolutely zero in my life. So they have to use the left-wing version of bigotry, which basically means somebody
they don't like.
Yeah, disagrees with me. Yeah, disagrees with me. Must be a bigot.
Yeah, I pretty much just come to the conclusion that these people are trash people, and there's nothing we're ever going to do to change their minds. So now I just call them nerds and keep going.
It's so funny, because to be honest with you, I mean, I'm probably not revealing anything people don't already know. I kind of was a nerd when I was in school, okay? I kind of was the goody two-shoes kid. And now I feel like the people coming after me are like, goody two-shoes times a million, you know?
Right.
The goody two-shoes times a million. So now, all of a sudden, thanks to these people, thanks to Francis Wendt and whoever the other guy is, and Joe Bishop Henchman, at least implicitly, although, you know, I don't, he's not at least publicly been against me, so I appreciate that. But being against the Mises Caucus, and I associate with them, they have somehow retroactively made me into the cool kid. First time in my life. It's never happened before.
It's just wild. I mean, you are like the leader of this giant cult to them, Tom.
Yeah, it's insane. It's totally insane. Anyway, it's been fun to actually sit back and kind of withdraw a little bit and let Dave, you know, get out there and
take the heat.
Yeah, because I watch. Well, I mean, I'm at this point. They've run out of new things to say. They've got something from like 25 years ago or something. But to really watch Dave kind of take on a kind of a leadership role, even though he's kind of like Colonel Edward House in the Wilson administration. He didn't have an official position, but man, was he influential. And likewise, you know, he's not on the LNC. He doesn't occupy an official or elected position or anything, but he has a kind of a moral authority and people really like him and he's got a big audience. And it's been great to see, you know, somebody like Dave, you know, go from a guy with a growing audience to being a guy a lot of people look up to. And yeah, they're trying to go after him, but the problem is they are such, I mean, they are such goody two shoes and they're so utterly humorless and they're going after a professional comedian. This is nuts. You are going to get killed out there. Okay. You're just going to get slaughtered. And they're so humorless. I even have to specify, I don't mean literal killing and slaughter. I mean rhetorically. All right, everybody.
It's so true. It's so true. Absolutely. And I get what you're saying about the, you know, you have a rad community behind you that, you know, when they go after you, that just electrifies your base. I went from somebody nobody knew 4 years ago to having a base like that. It's smaller than yours, but it's getting
there. But let me say something on your behalf here. The way that you have conducted yourself in all this, standing against the whole world and a whole bunch of raving lunatics, and also defending Karen Ann Harless, how are they going to look at Karen Ann Harless? Just look at her. And pretend she's right wing.
Yeah.
You know, just anything about her life and pretend that she, so they can't, they realize that they've met their match. They can't possibly accuse her of bigotry or right wingism. She's just fair-minded. You know, she'll criticize us just as much as she criticizes somebody else. And I respect that. And she stood up and said a lot of things about it's wrong what would happen in New Hampshire. And the people on the board, I mean, these are the same people who look the other way at the absolute savagery you endured at the hands of some people in the park. They absolutely looked the other way, didn't notice that at all. No violation of decorum there. They didn't notice that at all. But suddenly when somebody speaks up to say, there's serious wrongdoing here, and yeah, I'm going to speak somewhat intemperately about wrongdoing because that's how I deal with injustice, they're more upset about her speaking than they are about the injustice. I mean, that's so, like, it's the same kind of thing where they're more interested in making sure that transgender people can fight in the military than they are about the injustice of the wars they'd be fighting.
Right.
It's always a perverse set of priorities with these people. Always.
And these are the same people who are asking us to trust them when we fight the state.
Yeah. You know. Honestly, I don't understand. Given their worldview, I don't see what their problem with the state is, honestly. I mean, their worldview is exactly the same worldview as anybody in the Democratic Party. And so the Democratic Party correctly concludes that because we have this worldview, we need a massive state to correct all these problems in society. Right. I don't understand how you look at the world in this way, where you think the number one problem in America is white supremacy and racism, and your conclusion is, let's get rid of the government. Why would that be your conclusion?
Right. Yeah, it makes sense. What are you going to do? It's the same as the Democrats with their abolish the police. You know, they want to abolish the police. Well, who's going to enforce all the regulations and laws that you guys want?
Yeah. And by the way, I had fun with that one because I actually, you know, as an ANCAP, you know, in the sense of the government police, I do want to defund them. I actually want to defund them. And what was so funny about that was they would say, defund the police. And then people would say, wait a minute, defund the police? You mean the police wouldn't get any dollars at all? And they'd say, we don't mean that. We mean this, that, and the other thing. And I would say, see, look, even when you people sound like you've accidentally stumbled on the right view, you're never right. You just can't ever be right about anything. So I would come along and insert myself into these conversations and say, I actually want to defund them.
Yeah, I actually completely.
Because doggone it, they don't actually solve crimes. That if your house gets robbed, they're never going to find that guy. That's never going to happen. You'll be made whole, not by the police, but by the insurance company. Right. They're not going to find your stuff. That'll never happen. Or you get killed. Yeah, okay. There's a 3% chance they're going to find that guy, bring him to justice, and do something about it. I mean, the numbers are horrific. I mean, I don't know. I made up 3%, but it's low. It's very low. We have this myth about the police because we all watch Law and Order. You know, and within an hour, they figured out who did it, how they did it. He's in court, and usually they nab him. That is not how it works. So, yeah, I actually want to defund them. I do. And these leftists are saying to me, hey, you know, don't be crazy. And I'm thinking,
you're getting kind of crazy there, Tom.
Somebody has to be the radical around here. And by the way, about all this thing, you know, I'm sorry. You know, by the way, Joshua, I'm sorry. I totally dominated this conversation. It sounds
great.
It sounds like I've been drinking. I swear to you, I haven't. This is how I am when I have been drinking, by the way. So if anybody ever wants to know what that's like, have a few drinks, I'm going to be like this. But I'll tell you, a lot of the people, not all, but a lot of the people who are the most upset at Ole Woods here, because Woods is some right-wing deviationist. The funny thing is, I'm the guy who wanted to nominate the radical libertarian Jacob Hornberger, and they all want to nominate some boring, put-you-to-sleep establishment Republican hack. I'm supposed to be the right-wing fuddy-duddy, you know?
You wanted to nominate the guy that's for open borders.
I did want to nominate that guy.
You terrible, xenophobic racist.
Yeah, even though I think the correct position on immigration might be a little more subtle than Hornberger's, but I know he's a smart guy and his heart's in the right place, and I agree with him on so many things. And yeah, he was willing to be a radical libertarian and say, yeah, there are problems with the CIA. You know, like, I know that MSNBC doesn't want me to say that. Believe me, I know that. I know this will give the chair a heart attack. I know that. But I actually don't care about that. Right. Because the thing is, if your view is we need to make libertarian public policy proposals more palatable, then go into the Republican Party and push them a little bit in that direction. The point of a third party is not to push people 5% in a particular direction. Point of a third party is to have a third point of view.
Right.
We want to take your point of view and push it 20% farther, then go join that party and push it 20% farther.
Well, Tom, you said the first time I was on your show, I can't remember if this is the third or fourth time, but I appreciate you having me on a lot, especially for who I'm nobody. But one of the first things you ever told me on your show was, if there's going to be a Libertarian Party carrying the name Libertarian, it needs to have a chairman who's going to exude those principles.
Yep.
You know, it was one of the first things you ever said to me. And I carried that around the country with me for 4 years. Got to exude those principles. You know, it's one of the reasons why I adopted two kids, because I didn't want them to go into the state. I was like, got to live those libertarian principles, you know? So, yeah, I get it. I know exactly what you're saying.
I'm sorry about the timing and all that, because maybe anything you say might be overtaken by events. But what happens now? There's an acting chair in the meantime, but what happens now?
Who's amazing. He was our vice chair. He's amazing. Super fair. He got friends from every caucus. He's been friendly with Mises Caucus, Prags, everybody. So he's a good guy to be where he's at right now. The motion to remove Karen Ann, he called it out of order this morning. So it effectively made them have to make a new motion. And Richard did make a new motion. Richard Longstreth, who's become a giant dick too. He made a new motion an hour later. But now, because the chair has resigned and Francis Wendt has resigned, those two votes no longer stand. And they can't revote because they've resigned. They're no longer on the board. And I don't think that... I know that Ken Molman's not going to vote to remove Karen Ann Harlos. So that's where we're at. And then I actually threw up another motion on the list just to show some hypocrisy, calling for the suspension of Richard Longstreth, because I want to see how many hypocrites there are on the list. So it's going to be an interesting time on the list for a couple of weeks. But I just... You know, I don't think we have the votes to remove Karen Ann, thankfully. She's been an absolute wonderful person. We did vote on putting together an investigation team to investigate corruption between our prior chair and the prior New Hampshire chair. So that's where we're going. That's where we're headed. And hopefully the right things come out of this. But I think this whole thing has shown that, you know, it was essentially like they kind of knew they were on their way out. So on their way out the door, they decided they were going to pull a pin and throw a hand grenade, but fortunately hit the tree and landed right back at their feet. It was one of those situations, you know.
Can you, before we go, make a plug for anything you want that you're doing?
Sure, yeah. Well, you know, I got the new show now.
Yeah, tell people about it.
Yeah, Break the Cycle's doing really great. It's growing really fast. I've had great people on the show like Dave Smith and Tom Horton. Dave Smith and Scott Horton twice. I almost called him Tom Horton. Can you believe that?
Yeah, I wonder what the combination of Tom Woods and Scott Horton would be like.
It would be an unstoppable force.
Yeah, like a stoner foreign policy economy guy. I don't know.
It would be ridiculous. No one would ever be able to stop that human. It'd probably rule the world within a couple years. But I got a great show called Break the Cycle. Check out at youtube.com/fightthedespots. We've got a really cool guy named Tom Woods coming on next month, which I'm really excited about, but we've had really great guests going really good. The video audio quality is good. I even got a really awesome intro song about wood chippers that some of your fans might like. So please check us out there. That's the most important thing. You can always follow me on Twitter at Joshua at Large. That's where I'm at war with most of the blue checks, not all the good ones, but definitely the bad ones.
All right, excellent. Well, at the show notes page, tomwoods.com/1923, I'll put links to Twitter and your podcast, and we'll have all that stuff up there for people to check out. All right, I sent you a message a few hours ago and said, hey, we got to just hurry up and do a show. You want to do it? And You're such a good sport. Here, we're recording on Father's Day. And on Father's Day, instead of taking it easy, you're talking to me, and I'm spending half the episode yelling at you.
I love it. This is the most candid I think we've ever been together. Yeah, I actually think
this may be one of my favorite episodes of all time, because, man, have I been meaning to get this off my chest. Now what I need to do is do a drunk episode. I mean, I got to do an episode. And now I'm going to get emails saying, you know, it is immoral to get deliberately drunk. Stop it. Have a sense of humor for 5 seconds of your life.
Well, Tom, if you do a drunk episode, I get to do the drunk episode with you, okay?
Okay.
You just let me know.
All right, we'll talk about it. We'll talk about it.
maybe we could get Scott Horton on too, and he'll just get really stoned. It'll be
great.
Maybe
it's more of a drinking game episode. When somebody says such and such, you take a drink, something like that. Anyway, we'll have to revisit this. But Joshua Smith, thanks so much for your time tonight.
I appreciate you, Tom. Thank you.
All right, everybody, that's going to do it. Now, starting tomorrow night, now, I don't know if you're hearing this as these come out, but Wednesday night, that would be the 23rd of June, 2021, I'll be at Porkfest. From that night, we'll probably make a brief appearance that night, and then I'll be there Thursday, Friday, and through Saturday, and then head out Saturday night. And we're going to have a great old time. It's sold out, more people attending than ever. It's the Porcupine Freedom Festival in New Hampshire that's been going on for heaven knows how long, but it's a wonderful time with great people. I have a lot of friends I haven't seen in quite a while who are going to be there. Really looking forward to it. I hope I get to meet some of you good folks there as well. But regardless, there'll still be Tom Wood Show episodes coming out day after day, because I am not going to leave you an orphan. All right, you're going to have your episodes coming out regardless of where I am in the world. That's the old Woods promise here that I'm making for this week. So expect more episodes, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.